Hi, I'm Jenny Quintana, and I'm from the Graduate School of Public Health here in San Diego, and that's our local School of Public Health for this meeting, so I would like to welcome you to San Diego. I'm glad that you came to this meeting, and I'm glad so far the weather has acted like San Diego weather. I'm talking today about in-vehicle levels of air pollution inside cars commuting across the U.S.-Mexico border at the San Diego-San Ysidro Tijuana border crossing. I have no relationships to disclose. No one's offered to give me lots of money for this, unfortunately. I'm sure you're aware that here in San Diego, we're very close to the Mexican border. So if you go out here to Highway 5 and go 15 miles south, that you'll hit the San Ysidro border crossing. And this is a view of San Diego and the Tijuana area looking north from Tijuana here, looking north into San Diego. Satellite view, and you can see it looks like a very much a linked one big urban area that's linked together, and that's true. In fact, we're linked by economic ties, social ties, and cultural ties. Here's another aerial view I took from Google Earth. This is the San Ysidro border crossing, looking down at the border crossing. This is the border going along right here. This is Highway 5 going south into Mexico. And this our cars lined up going north at the San Ysidro border crossing. There's 21 lanes, I think. And you can see the cars are very backed up. And they can't actually back up a kilometer this direction into Mexico. It can be very congested. So the US Customs and Border Protection say this is the busiest land border crossing in the world. And delays at this border can be frequent, an hour or more. And they've really increased since September 11th. If you listen to National Public Radio here in San Diego, they'll announce the border wait along with the traffic, and they might say 60 minutes at San Ysidro, 90 minutes sometimes in the morning on a bad day. It might be as much as 120 minutes at San Ysidro. The delay at the San Ysidro border has been studied by the San Diego Association of Governments, known as SANDAG. And they estimated in this study that 60 million people cross the border here per year. They surveyed a random sample of people crossing the border and found the majority were resident in Mexico. And the majority of trips, over 90%, were local in nature, just going from Tijuana area to San Diego area. About 17% were for work or business coming from Mexico, Mexican residents, and about 10% of US residents. So a fair amount of people live in Tijuana and cross the border to come north to work in San Diego, or live in San Diego and cross south to work in Tijuana. They estimated that there would be $5 billion lost due to delays at the border, and this is personal delays, not the freight trucks crossing the border with freight. And 3 million lost work hours for residents of Mexico, and almost 500,000 work hours for US residents. So delays are kind of a social burden, they're an economic burden, and I'm investigating the question, could they also present a public health burden to our community? We know that traffic exposure is bad for you. You can be, there are studies of chronic exposure to traffic, where you reside near a busy road, for example, and it has been linked to cancer, risk of cancer, lung deficits, cardiac problems. And increasingly, a body of literature has linked exposure to traffic, high levels of traffic, with adverse birth outcomes as well. But as well as kind of adding to your chronic or daily burden of exposures, exposure to traffic may also present a hazard if you get a short-term high excursion in a value. And there's some literature that has linked short-term peak exposures as presenting an acute health risk. One of the first studies in 2004 by Peters et al. Linked being in traffic to risk of a heart attack a short time later. So I was measuring exposures inside the car, inside the vehicle, and why would you want to measure air inside a car? And that's because exposures that you breathe while you're driving have really rarely been measured. We've measured workplaces quite a bit, homes quite a bit, outside air quite a bit, schools quite a bit, but very little actually inside cars. And on those few studies that have been made, pollutant levels can be high to particulate matter, for example, or to carcinogens such as benzene. Also, in the few studies that have been done, they've suggested that commuting can contribute a fairly major percentage of your 24-hour exposure to those pollutants. And exposures may also be different, because if you think about it, you're on the road and you're breathing very, very fresh car exhaust that's being sucked into your car. And in particular, there's one pollutant called ultrafine particles, and these are particles, very small nanoparticles, less than 0.1 micrometers. And they seem to be kind of exist in a cloud over a roadway where these concentrations fall off very rapidly within, say, 100 meters or 300 feet from a road and be concentrated very much around freeways and roadways. So our objective was to quantify exposures to toxic air pollutants experienced by commuters across the border, and especially looking at this time they're sitting in that traffic and waiting at the border. And if you've ever sat there waiting to cross, you probably wondered what you were breathing as well. Our methods, we recruited participants who frequently crossed the border, and we got permission from U.S. and Mexican customs to cross the border with these two boxes inside the car with wires and two sticking out in the back, either the back seat or the front seat. This is actually one of the more difficult parts of the study. U.S. Customs and Homeland Security was very helpful and put up very few barriers. We had more problem with Mexican customs because there was no category to cross frequently with pollution equipment. The permits were more meant for going in one time and staying there a long time, not going back and forth on the same day. Participants had a questionnaire they would complete, and they had a voice-activated recorder and a camera they're only supposed to use if it was safe to use it, like when they're completely stopped, and a GPS unit that was inside the vehicle. And so far, we studied 86 subjects. Our permit has, again, not been renewed, so we may have to stop at this. We hope to do 100. This is GPS data showing the subject's route. This is our partner university, Uabese, and just over the border in Otay. The participant would go, if they're going north, they would go to this university and have pollution equipment placed inside their car by the students. And although there's a crossing right here, which is much shorter, we asked them to cross at San Ysidro because the majority of crossers do cross at San Ysidro. We wanted to capture that exposure. So they would leave and drive through surface streets, arrive at the border, wait. And if you go to the next slide, you can see this is a zoomed picture of them waiting at the border with one little one-minute dots sitting there waiting at the border. Then they would go north and come over to our lab at San Diego State University, where we take out the equipment in preparation for the return trip. We measured the following pollutants: black carbon, which is a marker for diesel exhaust, particle-bound polyaromatic hydrocarbons, or PAHs, PM2.5 is particulate matter, 2.5 micrometers or less, that can penetrate into the deep lung. Ultrafine particles, again, these nanoparticles that are really clustered around roadways. Carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide is a measure of the vehicle ventilation. Our study subjects were mostly young. They mostly drove old cars. And if you're thinking they're young and they're driving old cars, they must be students. And you would be right. They're mostly students at Uabese or SDSU. The median weight was, in the data so far, was 41 minutes. The longest was greater than 2 hours. Crossed at various times of day. We asked them if they purchased gas last in U.S. or Mexico, because the gas can differ in the content of benzene. And then we also asked them about window position. Did they have the windows down? Did they have them up? And about a quarter had the windows always down, a little bit less always up. The rest would have them going up and down during the wait. And relatively few had air conditioning or a fan used during their trip. We also asked about lane location. Since the wind blows from the west over to the east, there might be some effect of where they were sitting at the border. This is the type of data that we would get for, this is one person's experience on one day. It was a day very much like Saturday. It was a hot, clear day, about 82 degrees at the border. And the x-axis is time of day. So when they left Oabese here and are driving north and arriving at our university right here, and these, it's the same time period, but the pollutants are plotted on different graphs. The green color is the time they were in Mexico up until the time they arrived at the border. And the white color is when they're sitting at the borderline. And the red color is when they were driving on the US side. So for black carbon, you can see they're leaving the university and they're experiencing some peaks in black carbon levels with a relatively low exposure here and then a kind of a really big exposure partway through their border weight, which is probably being near a smoky vehicle. And then again, some additional exposure on the US side as well. For PM 2.5, you can see up and down exposure here in Mexico side, peaks experience sitting at the border, and then a much lower level in the US. And this is fairly typical for PM 2.5 that we're seeing about twice as high values on the Mexican side as the US side. Again, these are values measured inside the car. The green line here, it's hard to see, is carbon monoxide. And this is a pollutant that we saw fairly reliably elevated at during the border wait, which is not too surprising, I guess, if you're in slow or stop traffic. This is the one pollutant we almost always saw going up at the border. And ultrafine particles, again, these nanoparticles around roadways, going up and down again, also during the border wait. So some exposure on all sides, all parts of the commute. So I'm going to talk about my results kind of in two separate ways. One is looking at the time that you're sitting waiting in line at the border as a unique exposure environment. I really expected this to be a very unique exposure profile, but that's not actually what I found, as I'll explain in a few minutes. The one pollutant we have seen, and this is data from about half our subjects so far. We're still trying to clean up our data. We have a lot of data generated by these instruments. Carbon monoxide is routinely elevated during the border wait, and so we definitely see that signal at the border. And ultrafine particles, these very small particles, the medians are 30,000 particles per cc at the border weight versus 16,000 in Mexico going north and 20,000 in the US particles per cc. So higher at the border than in the Mexico side or the US freeways. And I was surprised to see this because ultrafine particles are associated with being on roadways, and early data had suggested they're more common at high speeds than they are at low speeds. So this is not what I expected to see. But for many pollutants, sitting at the border was just part of the overall high levels of pollutants you get sitting in your car. So the border weight was potentially contributing to your daily exposure to these pollutants. PM 2.5, again, being about twice on the US side versus on the Mexican side. Black carbon and particle-bound PAHs, no significant difference between being in Mexico or at the border on US freeways. We also looked at the issue of peak exposure because we define peaks as two times the median sitting at the border weight. Because again, short-term peaks in exposure can potentially present a health hazard. And in our data analysis so far, there are more peaks per hour on the roadway in Mexico, 6 peaks per hour going north versus 3.3 peaks per hour at the border and 3.6 peaks per hour on the US side. But if you look at the percent of time that you spend breathing high values, because the border weight can be such a large part of your overall commute, it contributes the most minutes to your exposure at peak high values. So limitations of this study are probably obvious to the audience I'm speaking to. Small sample size. It was not randomly chosen. It wasn't a random survey of people who frequently cross the border. We did not tell the subjects how to do their windows, to have them up or down, or use the air conditioning. They were free to behave as they wished. The air outside the car was not measured, so we're not looking at the protection or not that the car offers. We're just showing what's actually inside the car that people are breathing. And we didn't measure the total personal daily exposure of that person, so we can't say this trip contributed 65% of your total daily exposure to ultrafines. We can only infer that from other studies. And especially, our route did not vary. And this was really for human subjects' reasons. We didn't want people to be driving around, say, Tijuana and have their car broken into because of all this equipment in the back and put them at risk. Strengths are we're measuring air people actually breathing, and that we're measuring able to measure these short-term peaks in exposures. So in conclusion, the title, Don't Breathe and Drive, is actually the title of a, of an Environmental Health Perspectives article, a very good article on this issue. We found that pollutants measured inside cars were elevated in air that commuters were breathing during the border wait. And the implications are that reducing border wait time could significantly reduce, potentially significantly reduce overall daily exposures to toxic air pollutants. And I was interested in the border wait because this is something we could actually do something about. You can't change where people live or where they work, but you could, you know, potentially reduce the time they're sitting breathing pollutants during this border wait. And measures to protect yourself include driving cars with these cabin filters, which a recent article came out in Environmental Health Perspectives by Puey et al. They really work. They reduce particle levels in your car down to office levels, you know, within, I don't know, 20 minutes, I think it was. But when I was reading the article, I was really struck by it would even increase the socioeconomic disparities in exposures because the filters are really common. They're already common in, say, a Lexus or something like that, and more common in the newer, more expensive cars. So I'm interested in further investigations, including the pedestrians that also have to stand in line breathing traffic, waiting at the border, people that work at the border, like Mexican Customs, and people that have to wait in the truck line, which is also even worse of a wait at Otay. I'd like to thank our participants and thank our students who worked on this project. At least one of them is here, Dara Kagawala is over there. Hi, Dara. I'd like to thank Dr. Rodriguez Ventura at UABC and Dr. Adriana Vargas, and especially our students, chemistry students, Jesse and Paulina at UABC, who were instrumental for this study, and also to thank the US EPA who funded this through the SCRP mechanism. Thank you.
But my older sister called me from Georgia and said, gee, I just realized that I was really feeling bad on my 45-minute commute to where I teach. And I realized it was all the time they were spraying cotton along the roadways when I was going into Savannah early in the morning and coming back. So she was asking me, what are all the things she could do in the car? And of course, that's a pesticide. Did you look at whether any of the area that people were going through as they come up to the border had other kinds of contaminants that would be pulled into the car? And then because you're sitting there, you just be exposed to them more?
This is a very urban area and urban drive. But the cars, especially when you're moving at speed, there's a lot of air changes per hour compared to this room. They've studied that, and you know, upwards of 45 air changes per hour or something, where this room might be, you know, 6 or 10. So they things that are outside do tend to get inside cars unless they're engineered to really reduce those pollutants. Question at the back.
I'm interested in if you compare the people that pass the 10-feet lane, you said 4.1, 10 feet, which is the fast lane, compare them to the people that were actually sitting and waiting. That would be interesting to see the comparison of those who have immediate access into the United States as compared to those who really sat out there.
Yeah, we asked our funding agency, and Dr. Ganster gave us advice that they would like the same mix in our participants as have in real life, and I think about 10% of people cross in Century Lane, and so we were shooting for that. We undershot that a little bit. Their exposure is reduced because the time sitting there is reduced. I mean, you know, by maybe going from an hour and 2 hour commute down to an hour commute or less, and so and these levels are relatively high relative to ambient air or to workplaces or to, you know, office buildings and to your home. So they would definitely have a reduced exposure. So, Iran?
Yes, Jenny, could we go back to the time series chart showing particle bound pH? I was curious, at the top there, why it seems, I guess, just from first glance, that there are lower levels in Mexico as opposed to the U.S. Is it after you, I guess, calculate a mean and compare those, are those significantly different?
This is one person on one day. So this is a very clear day. It turned out to be not too much traffic. And we can tell how much traffic there was in Mexico by how long it took him to get from Huabese to the border. You know, sometimes it takes a while even to get there. So I could show another person where they had higher exposures in Mexico. But in general, overall, it looks bad to be on a roadway, whether you're in Mexico or at the border or on U.S. roads, it's also high inside the car. Right now, that's not statistically significant between those two environments, even though a person's daily pattern might change. And the university in is near Otay Mesa Crossing, and it's up this big steep hill. And on Friday night, our participants were going back on a Friday night, going up that hill. The levels of ultrafines were just unbelievable in our data, causing big outliers, and also for black carbon and PAHs. Yeah, it'd be very.
And there's going to be oftentimes children too, which
yeah,
are even closer to the ground, so it would be, I think, really interesting to see what their exposure looks like.
Yeah, this the ethylometer that measures black carbon and PAHs, ours is this 25-pound instrument. In fact, our students at Huabese didn't even tell me for like 6 months they didn't have an elevator and they're carrying this up and downstairs. I felt really bad, but. But they just came out with a very small portable version of the ethylometer, which could be used very easily to put on a person more easily than these big fixed equipment.
So. Is there any reason why you didn't have scripted behavior so that everybody had their windows up so you get a more equivalent exposure?
Looking at my data now, I'm like, why didn't I just tell them all to half of you are doing it up and half of you are doing it down? But my thinking when I started, I wanted a snapshot of what people really got for whatever reason. Now I'd like to, I feel like having some more runs with just me and my students where we have very controlled window positioning and stuff like that. But it really depends on the car, too. So my old car is going to look worse than a new car. I'm not sure how many cars I need to sample as well as doing that, too. Sorry.
Did you calculate the exposure of people that were there 8 hours a day, like customs employees?
Right. I'm very interested in their exposures. I know that I talked to, every time I go over, I would talk to the, with the equipment for permits and stuff, I would talk to the Homeland Security guys and ask them, is somebody measuring stuff? Like, oh, yeah, someone came over. But, you know, OSHA limits for these kind of pollutants are very, very high and very permissive. They said we didn't violate them. But the U.S. Customs have a air-conditioned booth that they sit in, although they do go out. Although I noticed they have no booth in the secondary area for protection. But the Mexican Customs don't have air-conditioned booths, and I would be very interested in looking at their exposures. And other people, too, in the truck line. There's the truckers sitting in the cabs in the truck line. The truck backup goes right along by apartment blocks. There are a lot of people potentially exposed to this border delay besides people sitting in the vehicles. There's a lot of other people at the border, too. But I did measure outside the car. I can't calculate what necessarily is there outside the car from my data because I was measuring inside the car, which could be attenuated by the process of getting in the car. There is a car at the California Air Resources Board that they've outfitted with a little probe that sticks outside the car, and they have one that's inside the car, and they're driving around the LA freeways, which makes me never want to drive on the 710, I can tell you, that goes to Long Beach. That is the most polluted freeway I've ever seen. And they're getting into that outside to inside ratio for driving a little bit.
So I have one last question.
So.
I just want to know, do you have access to this information and verify where to direct students to look at it? Do you have any preliminary things on the website or paper?
Well, Dara and I are frantically working with the data trying to get a publication, and I would be happy to send you one, a draft, or this presentation if you want. So.